All right, Alexander, let's talk about the military situation in Ukraine. And we have the big announcement from Gerasimov to Russian President Vladimir Putin that Kupiansk has been captured, or as Gerasimov put it, he says that Kupiansk has been liberated. That is the big announcement from the Russian military. Of course, we have all kinds of activity elsewhere. Zaporozhye, Pokrovsk. It's pretty much been accepted that Pokrovsk has been captured by Russia, though I don't think there's been an official MOD statement on that. And then you have another area, which is Siversk, which Russia is advancing in. So your thoughts?
Now, this is a very interesting moment because Putin again came to the command post of one of the Russian military groups. You remember back in October, he went to the command post of the military group that was besieging Pokrovsk. This time he went to a different one, the one that's basically involved in the fighting in Kupiansk,
The
the
West,
West group.
yeah, that's
And
grouping,
of
yeah.
course, he had the Gerasimov there and the top military officers. But of course, they didn't just talk about Kupiansk. They talked about the whole military situation altogether. So a number of very interesting things came out, and they do give a really stark picture of, I would say, accelerating collapse of Ukrainian defenses in Donbass. They didn't talk very much about Zaporozhye, by the way. Gerasimov gave a quick overview of the whole situation across the entire front lines, and he did talk about Zaporozhye and Dnipropetrovsk, and he did say that the Russians are indeed advancing there. But it was mostly focused on the fighting in Donbass, and Putin also got reports along with the report he got from Gerasimov from the two military commanders. The military commander who's dealing with the situation in Konstantinovka and Siversk, and the military commander who's dealing with the situation in Kupiansk. So let's start with Kupiansk. You're absolutely correct. The Russians, Gerasimov, and the military chief in charge of the battle in Kupiansk, they both say that Kupiansk is now completely under Russian control. The Russians have cleared Kupiansk. There is still a large body of Ukrainian troops, 15 battalions, according to Putin. Now, if they were all up to strength, that would be about 7,500 men. Nobody believes it's that many. It must be significantly less than that. But 15 battalions of Ukrainian troops surrounded, as far as I can tell, in open fields east of Kupiansk, east of the Oskol River. It's clearly a crisis. The Russians have control of Kupiansk, but they've also surrounded these men there, and there doesn't seem to be any chance now that they can escape or that they can break out. It's a question only of time. It's only a matter of time before either this group surrenders or it is destroyed. And I don't want to speculate about what destroyed means because that is extremely disturbing. The military commander in charge of this operation, however, disclosed something else. He disclosed the fact that, as he put it, this is the Izium direction. So the Russians are ultimately plan to capture Izium. This is an important town north of Slavyansk, which the Russians held in 2022, and whose capture, recapture, would enable the Russians to encircle the Slavyansk-Kramatorsk conurbation from the north. When the Russians held Izium in 2022, they weren't able to keep it because all sorts of other places around Izium were still under Ukrainian control. But now, of course, the Russians are far stronger. It's clear that the Russian objective is to encircle the Ukrainian troops in the Slavyansk-Kramatorsk conurbation. Pokrovsk, as you rightly say, is about to fall. In the north, they're going to get Izium. You can see that a massive cauldron is emerging. Now, this commander also disclosed that the important village of Yampol is now under Russian control. There's been some dispute about this, but I've no doubt that this is true. And that the Russians have also now broken into and are in the process of storming Liman. So Liman, another important town in this area, you're getting the sense that Slavyansk is now being surrounded, that the Russians are in the process of surrounding Slavyansk. So that was one very interesting set of revelations. Now, the other Russian commander is in charge of the operations in Siversk and Konstantinovka. Now, he also confirmed that there is fighting going on in Siversk. He said that Siversk is being stormed. He gave a very interesting account of what's going on in Siversk. I got the clear impression that Siversk is going to pass. He expects the Russians to take full control of Siversk within the next few days. But he's also in charge of the Battle of Konstantinovka, which is the southernmost town of the Slavyansk-Kramatorsk-Konstantinovka line of fortified cities. It is a city that lies to the east of Pokrovsk, and it's a bigger place than Pokrovsk. This commander said that he expects his troops to be in full control of Konstantinovka by mid-December, and he said that his forces have reached the center of Konstantinovka and have captured 4,000 buildings in Konstantinovka. So it looks as if the Russians are rapidly gaining control of Konstantinovka as well. Now, the commander who's in charge of the Pokrovsk battle was not there. There's a lot of fighting apparently still going on in that area, as we know. And Gerasimov said that this is where the Ukrainians have been trying to hold back the Russians most. They said that 70% of Pokrovsk is now fully secured and under Russian control. I think what that means is that they're still clearing pockets of resistance across Pokrovsk, rather than that there's any real continuous belt of control that the Ukrainians have in Pokrovsk. The Russians also provided footage of the main fortified area in Pokrovsk, which is a micro district called the Shakhtarsky micro district, which is one of these places that the Soviets used to build with very tall and very strong apartment buildings. It is now completely under Russian control. And the Ukrainian troops in Mirnograd, they're definitely surrounded. And there was a discussion about why they were not surrendering, and Gerasimov said that they're not surrendering because they've been threatened by the Zelensky government if they do surrender, and that provoked some very strong comments about the Zelensky government from Putin, who said that basically that they're a bunch of criminals. But the overall story, Pokrovsk about to fall, Mirnograd about to fall, Kupiansk has fallen, Liman, Siversk falling as well, Konstantinovka also falling, and the Russians targeting Izium, which if all of these other places fall, become undefendable. By the end of this year, it's likely we will start to see the full-scale siege of Slavyansk-Kramatorsk beginning. In other words, the cauldron, the great cauldron in the Donbass that we were talking about, if you remember, back in February and March 2022, will have finally formed.
The U.S. military officials in Kiev we're being led to believe, and I'm sure it's true, that their main purpose in Kiev was to get the Zelensky regime to agree to Trump's 28-point peace plan. But you got to imagine that if you have the Secretary of the Army, Driscoll, I believe is his name.
Yeah.
If you have him in Kiev, that he must have been briefed by Syrsky or other Ukraine command about the situation on the front lines. What do you think he's getting? What do you think? What information? What do you think his takeaway is going to be? Going to Kiev and trying to get a better understanding of the catastrophe that is unfolding across the entire extended front line.
Right, I'm going to say what I think here. I think that what has happened is that for the last couple of months, Trump has been briefed about the military situation in Ukraine, mostly by General Kellogg. And General Kellogg, as we've discussed in many programs, has been basically passing on to Trump what Zelensky and Syrsky and the Ukrainians have been telling him. Now, someone in Washington, I think, has finally understood that this isn't reliable information. And what has happened is that Kellogg has been cut out of the picture, and a completely different set of military people from the Pentagon, Driscoll and the chief of staff of the army, were sent to Kiev. And I think that the original purpose of that trip was exactly as a fact-finding mission, to try to get the Ukrainians to actually explain, finally, what is really going on. Now, what then happened is that this all got caught up in the rush to try to get some kind of settlement process going as well. So these Pentagon officials were then also charged with the separate task of telling Zelensky that he must accept or must work with Trump over this peace plan. So I think this mission got muddled. Now, I'm going to say what I think we can be confident about. What the Ukrainians will have told the Americans will in no way be true. The question is whether Driscoll and the army chief, the military man, whether these two officers are going to be as naive and as gullible as Kellogg has been. I suspect not.
We'll see.
We'll see.
We will see. Is there anything that the US can do to stop this collapse?
Militarily, there is absolutely
Militarily. We have the 28-point plan, which we've talked about in a previous video, which is Trump's attempt to prevent a type of Afghanistan or fall of Saigon moment. So there is an understanding that there is a big collapse. But is there anything they can do militarily?
You know, it's good that you brought up that because, again, in response to the 28-point plan, there's again been comments by a number of people, including people from the Institute for the Study of War, that if Ukraine surrenders the line of fortified towns in Donbass, then Kiev's outer wall, its main wall, will have fallen and the Russians will be able to advance all the way to Kiev and that there will be no major obstructions in their way. So, you know, if you follow the logic of that, and I think, by the way, there is a strong element of truth in this claim, then given the reality, which is that this line of cities is going to fall soon anyway, then that does point to the fact that we are perhaps closer to a potential fall of Kiev moment than I think many people in the West understand. So I just want to make that point. It's based on what, if you like, Kiev's, Zelensky's advocates in the West have been saying, without, I think, fully understanding what they're saying. They are actually revealing how critical the military situation currently is. So what can the United States do? There is only one way that the United States can prevent the ongoing collapse, and that is by becoming directly involved in the war, by unleashing the U.S. Air Force and sending the U.S. military into Ukraine. There aren't enough troops in Europe, U.S. troops in Europe, to do that. But, you know, there is an Air Force and they could become involved. Now, that's World War III. I don't for one moment believe that Trump really envisages World War III as part of the 28-point plan. The whole idea of NATO troops, including US troops, in Ukraine has been shelved. The idea of backstops have been shelved. There is nothing the United States can do, nothing practically that the United States can do to turn this situation around. There are no weapons it could supply, no military aid it can provide, no intelligence assistance it can provide. The realities are what we have said. The Donbass front is collapsing.
So why would Putin agree, why would Russia agree to a freeze of the front line and to the part of the 28-point peace plan which says that the remainder of Donetsk, of Donbass, will be a demilitarized zone? If they're already, or if they're in the process of preparing the final stage, which is Slavyansk. Yeah. I mean, Slavyansk effectively is the capture of all Donbass, of Donetsk.
It is the capture.
So why is
Slavyansk and Kramatorsk fall? Nothing left. Right. Just empty fields. I mean, that's all. A few villages, but that's all. I mean, it would be the end of the Battle of Donbass. Yeah. And that is just over the horizon.
So what's with this demilitarized nonsense?
Well, it is nonsense.
In that plan, right?
It is just nonsense. And again, we come back to Putin himself, because, of course, he knows all about this plan. I mean, he obviously does know. But, I mean, he's briefed about it. He knows about it. And he went out of his way to make his position absolutely clear. He said to Gerasimov, look, you know, we have our work to do. We have our just business to do. Our business is to fulfill all of the objectives of the special military operation. The country expects it. That's what Putin said. And he went on and said that the people who are in charge in Kiev are a bunch of criminals, an organized crime group who have usurped power and who are using the war to enrich themselves. Now, this is implacable language, and Putin will have made it in full knowledge, as I said, of all of these plans floating around. So that doesn't sound to me like the kind of rhetoric you would expect from somebody who's interested in freezes or ceasefires or things of that kind. So, and I think, well, all you have to do is to look at what Putin was saying. He turned up, by the way, in military uniform and a camouflage jacket and all of that. He was addressed as military chief. The whole tone of the language of this meeting was very, very much Putin, as the commander-in-chief, wanting all of the objectives achieved, the objectives that he set out back in February 2022, which is reiterated many times since and expanded in his speech to the foreign ministry in June last year, and which he'll probably be expanding soon again before very long. So I don't get the sense that he's in any kind of mood to compromise at all.
Our final question, does Zelensky and his entourage, do they bolt? Do they leave Kiev if Slavyansk falls, when Slavyansk falls? And I think that's a given that Slavyansk will eventually fall. I mean, I don't think there's anything, as you said, there's nothing that's going to stop Russia from completing its goals of the special military operation, except maybe U.S. boots on the ground, which would be World War III. So, okay. Yeah. If that happens, is that when Zelensky, given also all this corruption scandal stuff, I know the Europeans are coming to bat for him. I know the Europeans are supporting him. Zelensky even told parliament members that Yermak is not going anywhere because he has the cover of the Europeans. But the Europeans cannot protect him in a way that the United States can protect him, or the U.S. military can protect him, or in a way that the U.S. military can perhaps prevent for a certain time Russia's advance. The Europeans are nowhere near that. Does Zelensky realize, okay, it's game over, I need to leave?
Quite possibly. I get the sense that the mood in Kiev now is becoming extremely fractious. My own view, by the way, about the corruption scandal is, yes, it's possible the Americans have had a big input in it. They might have given the green light for it. But to me, it looks like a power struggle, which is being engaged in by an utterly corrupt political class. Every part of this political class is corrupt, by the way. I mean, I think that we need to understand that. So, you know, some of the people who are cheering this investigation on are themselves corrupt. And they're basically, what this is about is them pushing aside other people who are corrupt, Yermak, Mero, whomever, so that they can step in, fill up their suitcases before the time has come to bolt. So I think the fact that this is going on points to an oncoming collapse fairly soon. Quite plausibly, when Slavyansk, Kramatorsk fall, when the line of cities falls, when the Russians reach the Dnieper, which won't be much longer. I mean, we haven't discussed the situation in Zaporozhye, Dnipropetrovsk regions in this program, but the Russian advance towards the Dnieper is continuing at the same pace. So, and it is at least as important as what's going on in Donbass, because it brings the Russians closer and closer to the Dnieper, closer and closer to the point where they're able to occupy the cities, you know, the big cities, Zaporozhye, Kherson, ultimately Dnipro as well. So at that point, and it may not be very far away, given the very poor condition of the Ukrainian army, yes, quite likely you're going to see a rush of people leaving Kiev. We've already seen some indications, telltale signs of it. I think Zelensky will not be the first to go, but he won't be the last either. Probably there'll be a staging point. Quite possibly they will move west to somewhere like Zhytomyr or Vinnytsia, and then maybe to Lviv. But the very fact that they're leaving Kiev will accelerate the fall of Kiev itself, because if the government isn't there, why would they want to defend Kiev, just to say? Or why would the soldiers defend Kiev? And then, of course, we'll start to see things start to move faster still. And at that point, probably they will want to go abroad too. We'll see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. We will end the video there, theduran.locals.com. We are on X, Rumble, and Telegram. We are also on Substack. There's a link for our Substack in the description box down below. And check out the Duran shop. There's a link for that as well down below. Take care.